Truth.
I wish a buck was still silver. It was back when the country was strong. Back before Elvis and before the Vietnam War came along. Before the Beatles and yesterday, when a man could still work, still would. It's the best of the free life behind us now. And are the good times really over for good? And are we rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell? Kind of chance for the flag or the Liberty Bell. I wish a Ford and a Chevy would still last 10 years like they should. It's the best of the free life behind us now. And are the good times really over? Wish Coke was still cola, and a joint was a bad place to be. And it was back before Nixon lied to us all on TV. Before microwave ovens, when a girl could still cook, still would. Best of the free life behind us now. Are the good times really over for good? I've been rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell. With no kind of chance for the flag, the Liberty. Wish a Ford and a Chevy would still last 10 years like they should. Is the best of the free life behind us now? Are the good times really over for good? Stop rolling downhill like a snowball headed for hell. For the flag, and let's all ring the Liberty Bell. Let's make a Ford and a Chevy that'll still last 10 years like they should. 'Cause the best of the free life is still yet to come. Good times ain't over for good.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Friday, September 9, 2022 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for this wild and dystopic ride. People say I should say I'm your host, Chris Hinckley, so there I said it. September 11, 2022 is right around the corner, Sunday. And strange things are happening, you know. The queen is dead, long live the queen. Now the sustainable prince, who's actually now the sustainable king, has taken the throne. Remember what Joan Vian said? Prince Charles, the sustainable prince. And so that's interesting. We'll talk about that. But before I get into that, there are things that are beyond our control. The fires, maybe. Talk about that in a second. But then there are things that are not beyond our control. In other words, that are in our control. And we should probably be paying closer attention to things. I mentioned earlier this week the Off-Guardian article, 5 psychological experiments that explain the modern world. And those are the Milgram experiment, the Stanford Prison experiment, the Ash conformity experiment, and Festinger's cognitive dissonance experiment. The last, the apocryphal monkey ladder experiment that never really happened, or at least that's what we've been told. There never really was a 1960s Harvard experiment with monkeys, but that hasn't stopped the internet from keeping that myth alive. And so, like Thomas Jefferson said, don't believe everything you read on the internet. But what comes out of those experiments, the 5 or okay, maybe 4 experiments, is what Lark in Texas has reminded us of. You know, there's that joke, is it ignorance or apathy that plagues us? I don't know and I don't care. And so because of this social engineering, as Lark puts it, you know, there are the 3 A's that he says spring to mind: amnesia, abulia, and apathy. Amnesia, the collective memory dies. Abulia is a conditioned loss of will or learned helplessness. And apathy signifies our lack of concern or care. All 3 A's will eventually lead to our subjugation, our acculturation, and words matter. And yes, even our suicide, he says. And after that, he says, inter alia, these 3 things will likewise lead us all to an eventual state of anomie, then into a state of learned helplessness. And for anomie, see Emile Durkheim's Suicide, 1897, and Martin Seligman. And Martin Seligman is an interesting character in the discussion. Anyway, there's this social conditioning that has been at work. We are basically at war, in simple terms. You know, there are folks who want to condition us in cybernetic sort of fashion into a state of techno-slavery that is virtually inescapable, pun perhaps fully intended. So that's definitely happening, and the ways that's happening are myriad. They've been discussed on this broadcast and this network, but still, we have choices. We choose, you know, the dopamine addiction, for example, that the screens induce and reinforce. That notwithstanding, you know, guys like Simon Sinek have talked about that. We tell kids that drugs and alcohol are, they can't do that, but then we give them social media and these devices that are more addictive than heroin. And the way Simon Sinek put it, it's like giving them the keys to the liquor cabinet and saying, I know adolescence is tough, you know, here you go. And it's unfortunate that in some cases, you know, you hear stories about families, maybe like broken families, you know, mother and father not in the same house, and children are used as political pawns, obviously, and relationships are weaponized. And so one parent maybe gives a child, you know, and even an ostensibly well-meaning or well-intended parent might say, you know, here's a phone so that I know where you are and stuff, but it has, there are consequences. Neil Postman was right when he said, technology giveth, but we have to remember it also taketh. So there are those conditions, but we still choose. Parents still choose to to allow their kids to have phones. And it becomes even more a more provocative irony when we realize that guys like Steve Jobs, you know, there's that Popular Science article. When this discussion arises, I always think of the 2018 Popular Science article, "Industry Insiders Don't Use Their Products Like We Do." That should worry us. And there's a picture of Steve Jobs unveiling the iPad featured in the article. And the first sentence of the article, Apple founder Steve Jobs didn't let his kids use the iPad or really any product their dad invented, according to a 2014 report from Nick Bilton in the New York Times. So Steve Jobs made different choices than hundreds of millions of Americans. Isn't that interesting? I think there's a painful irony and provocative irony in there. So, you know, next little paragraph from the Popular Science article, they haven't used it, Jobs told Bilton. "We limit how much technology our kids use at home. Every night, the family had a phone-free dinner together," according to Walter Isaacson, author of the definitive biography, Steve Jobs. "The kids did not seem addicted at all to devices," Isaacson told Bilton. So, isn't this interesting? And there's probably a lesson to be learned in here, especially if you dig a little deeper and you understand the background of Steve Jobs and, you know, all of the kind of what surrounds this community, the Xerox PARC stuff, maybe the Menlo PARC stuff, and, you know, George Friedman has a valid point. You know, the military origin and application of a lot of this technology, and enterprising marketers like Steve Jobs. So there are lessons to be learned. And the point is, you know, we have choices to make. We can seek to assuage our troubled conscience in whatever way, but the fact remains, the Abulia-inducing social engineering notwithstanding, we still choose to turn on the screens. So in a certain sense, I would say, America, we become like that spouse. You know, that spouse that lets himself go, and it doesn't happen overnight. It happens over time. Let himself go, maybe gained a few pounds, okay, maybe quite a few pounds, doesn't really ever get dressed up, wears that same ratty t-shirt, and just really kind of underwhelming, generally speaking. And it didn't happen overnight, but it happens. And whatever excuse needs to be made to sort of rationalize it away is made. But the fact remains, there are choices involved. And we have choices. One of the things I appreciate about the older generations is, you know, I've talked about this before, that the gentlemen who wear the polyester cowboy and western shirts, maybe you know some of these folks, the snap-up shirts, the snap button shirts, and they're a pretty wash and wear kind of shirt that doesn't really, it's a pretty all-purpose kind of shirt. So whether they're gardening or, you know, working in the yard doing lawn, you know, yard work or something, or working on a vehicle, about as undressed as they get is rolling up their sleeves. But, you know, whether it's 60 or 90 out, they're wearing, you know, one of these polyester Western shirts, snap-up shirts with a t-shirt underneath, and you can count on it. It's something you know, I've talked about this in the past, and if you've experienced that, it's reassuring. It's comforting just to see it, because it's kind of a firewall against evil and degradation and bad things. This is stability and consistency, and it's reassuring to see that. And I have talked before about having a moment where I realized that's what we're all supposed to do. You look around and you see that's dwindling. Look at pictures of America 100 years ago. Look at how well-dressed people were. And that was important, not because of vanity. These days, it seems we've flipped. You know, people were well-dressed, not because they were vain, but because it was essentially the right thing to do, to take pride in your image and how you present yourself was a good thing. It meant that you took yourself seriously, you were ready to take on the world, and that sort of paved the way for good things to happen. Now we flipped it, where even the most high-profile celebrities wear ratty-looking clothes and, you know, go to secondhand shops. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but they do it to make a statement. And so now we've let ourselves go, and we pretend that it's the inversion of what we saw in a bygone era, where people are taking pride in this rattiness, but not pride in a good way, more in a vain sort of sense. Look, I'm expressing myself. So it's interesting to see that. I think it's unfortunate. We have choices. We shouldn't let ourselves go like that spouse, you know, that doesn't really try anymore. I'm married. I don't need to try. Not that he says that, but, you know, really, that's kind of what's happening. So don't let the... And again, this is not accidental. Remember, Sean Parker admitted it. In fact, maybe we should just play that clip. There's Chamath Palihapitiya. I really appreciate what he said back in 2017 at that Stanford School of Business talk, what Sean Parker said in 2017, same thing. Yeah, we have time. The title of the Axios post, there were a couple of them, but this one is titled, Sean Parker, Facebook was designed to exploit human vulnerability. So my question is, if you have people like Chamath Palihapitiya, Sean Parker, I mean, this is a scandalous admission. I think this should be criminal, personally. But there was a moment where there were several people who were involved in the making of this technology, talking about psychological manipulation, social engineering, you know, Skinner box sort of operant conditioning. Chamath Palihapitiya was obviously one of them. Sean Parker mentioned Tristan Harris, Sandy Perikilis, right? There were several folks. And that all kind of went by the wayside. Anyway, here's what Sean Parker said. Go ahead, please, if we have time.
You know, if the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, to really understand it, that thought process was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible. And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content, and that's going to get you, you know, more likes and comments. I mean, it's a social validation feedback loop that it's like a, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology, And I just, I think that we, you know, we, the inventors, creators, you know, and it's me, it's Mark, it's the, you know, Kevin Systrom at Instagram, it's all of these people, understood this consciously, and we did it anyway.
So here's a question. When Sean Parker is saying that, he says, a hacker like myself, what is being hacked? Or perhaps the better question is, the more accurate, more appropriate question is, who is being hacked? And why would we do this to children? Again, especially since, as Eleanor Cummins pointed out in her Popular Science article, referring to Nick Bilton's New York Times article, his report, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Guys like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates do not do this. Why would... And there were other examples in Eleanor Cummins' excellent article that, again, should get people thinking. You know, skipping down in the article, as of 2014, Reynolds American, which makes Camel cigarettes, no longer lets employees smoke in the office. The company's former CEO, Susan Cameron, stopped smoking conventional cigarettes more than 15 years ago, according to Fortune magazine, and turned to electronic cigarettes, which some believe are a healthier, though no less addictive, alternative. That is turning out not to be the case, right? And there are others. Continuing down, take the grandchildren. So, in his 2013 book, Salt, Sugar, Fat, author Michael Moss documented the ways in which food manufacturers hacked our taste buds. Speaking of hacking, what gets hacked or who? Our taste buds and designed snacks, sodas, and other grub that keep us hooked. Skipping down a little bit, take the grandchildren of Bob Drain, the creator of Lunchables. One of Drain's adult children allows his own kids to eat Lunchables, according to Moss's reports, but Drain's daughter, Monica, doesn't let her children anywhere near this stuff, which she calls junky and awful. They know they exist, and they know Grandpa Bob invented them, she said, but we eat very healthfully. So, we have choices, despite the Skinner box operant conditioning induced apathy, abulia, learned helplessness. We can choose to retrain our minds and make good choices. But seriously, it's fascinating how we rationalize things away and sort of excuse ourselves. Since we skipped the break, I mentioned Simon Sinek. Yeah, we can do this. And we'll start here. What he said some pretty provocative things about this, so we'll do this. Simon Sinek, the millennial question. Speaking of the dopamine hacking and exploitation, and, you know, I've talked about this in the past. There, I could go on and on and on about how this is being done more and more pervasively. And in a way that is intended to be imperceptible. It's intentionally designed to be imperceptible. That incorporates so many things, I won't even get into it. Here's what Simon Sinek said back in 2016. Go ahead, please.
What, did I do something wrong? Do they not like me anymore, right? The trauma for young kids to be unfriended, right? Because we know when you get a hit of dopamine, which feels good. It's why we like it. It's why we keep going back to it. Dopamine is the exact same chemical that makes us feel good when we smoke, when we drink, and when we gamble. In other words, it's highly, highly addictive, right? We have age restrictions on smoking, gambling, and alcohol, and we have no age restrictions on social media and cell phones, which is the equivalent of opening up the liquor cabinet and saying to our teenagers, hey, by the way, this adolescence thing, if it gets you down... But that's basically what's happening. That's basically what's happening, right? That's basically what happened. You have an entire generation that has access to an addictive, numbing chemical called dopamine through social media and cell phones as they're going through the high stress of adolescence. Why is this important? Almost every alcoholic discovered alcohol when they were teenagers. When we're very, very young, the only approval we need is the approval of our parents. And as we go through adolescence, we make this transition where we now need the approval of our peers. Very frustrating for our parents, very important for us. It allows us to acculturate outside of our immediate families into the broader tribe, right? It's a highly, highly stressful and anxious period of our lives, and we're supposed to learn to rely on our friends. Some people, quite by accident, discover alcohol and numbing effects of dopamine to help them cope with the stresses and anxieties of adolescence. Unfortunately, that becomes hardwired in their brains. And for the rest of their lives, when they suffer significant stress, they will not turn to a person, they will turn to the bottle. Social stress, financial stress, career stress, that's pretty much the primary reasons why an alcoholic drinks, right? What's happening is because we're allowing unfettered access to these dopamine-producing devices and media, basically it's becoming hardwired. And what we're seeing is as they grow older, too many kids don't know how to form deep, meaningful relationships. Their words, not mine. They will admit that many of their friendships are superficial. They will admit that their friends, that they don't count on their friends, they don't rely on their friends, they have fun with their friends, but they also know that their friends will cancel on them if something better comes along. Deep, meaningful relationships are not there because they never practice the skill set, and worse, they don't have the coping mechanisms to deal with stress. So when significant stress starts to show up in their lives, they're not turning to a person, they're turning to a device, they're turning to social media, they're turning to these things which offer temporary relief. We know, the science is clear, we know that people who spend more time on Facebook suffer higher rates of depression than people who spend less time on Facebook, right? These things balanced. Alcohol is not bad, too much alcohol is bad. Gambling is fun, too much gambling is dangerous, right? There's nothing wrong with social media and cell phones. It's the imbalance, right? If you're sitting at dinner with your friends and you're texting somebody who's not there, that's a problem. That's an addiction. If you're sitting in a meeting with people you're supposed to be listening to and speaking, and you put your phone on the table, face up or face down, I don't care, that sends a subconscious message to the room that you're just not that important to me right now. Right? That's what happens. And the fact that you cannot put it away.
Yeah. The fact that you cannot put it away is because you are addicted. And that's what happens. And it's a... societal phenomenon. It's a tribal phenomenon. And so, back to Neil Postman's point, maybe we should play that. Maybe we should play, I didn't intend to do this, but, you know, Neil Postman's point about technology giveth, but it also taketh. What has it taken in this case that Simon Sinek is talking about? And Chamath Palihapitiya echoes that, articulated it well, the brittle connections, not really relationships, but the brittle connections that people make is exactly what Simon Sinek is talking about. These are very shallow, very brittle connections that people are making. I've put it this way. This is not communication. People construe this as communication. It is what I would call interfacing. Like a couple of... machines, a couple of technology devices that have NIC cards that are exchanging information. It's interfacing. It's really largely devoid of substantive and emotional connection. And that's tragic. So, stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off Drop-In Lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease-Off, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
I did not intend to do this at all, to go this direction, but I think it's important. And so we'll get back on track. But, you know, the communist trope, what is to be done, dear comrades? What is to be done? I joke, but seriously, you know, again, we have choices, and maybe we can play the Neil Postman clip. There's some great stuff. You know, what can be done about this? I have some suggestions, maybe some light reading over the weekend, for example, and things that we can share with one another, friends, family, etc. But first, before we do that, again, these are the folks, these are the, you know, Sean Parker, for example, obviously involved in the launch of Facebook. Chamath Palihapitiya, same thing. Here's what Chamath Palihapitiya said about this social media. I should do the Neil Postman thing first, because Postman was the guy who said technology is a double-edged sword. He reminded us, and it's, man, the interwebs are the hotbed and the breeding ground of the snake oil sales community. It is like a little cottage industry of snake oil sales, because every new technological endeavor is going to solve the world's problems, and it's become a religious sort of fanaticism, and it's filled with its own group of zealots and everything. Of course, everybody that creates something wants to believe that it's going to solve all the world's problems. We want to believe that because we want our enterprise to be successful. And, you know, you start out and you think it's going to solve these problems and things, but there is a zealotry involved, and there is a sort of willful blindness to what Neil Postman reminded us of, that technology is a double-edged sword. It giveth and it taketh. And we don't consider what it taketh often enough, if at all, sometimes. So here's what Chamath Palihapitiya had to say at his Stanford Graduate School of Business talk back in 2017, titled Chamath Palihapitiya, Founder and CEO, Social Capital on Money as an Instrument of Change. Go ahead, please.
I want to bring us back to the point that you were making about exploiting consumer behavior in a consumer internet business. You said that this is a time for soul searching in social media businesses, and you were part of building the largest one. What soul searching are you doing right now on that?
I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feigned this whole line of like there probably aren't any really bad unintended consequences, I think in the back, deep, deep recesses of our minds, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this. It literally is a point now where I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the social fabric of how society works. That is truly where we are. And I would encourage all of you, as the future leaders of the world, to really internalize how important this is. If you feed the beast, that beast will destroy you. If you push back on it, we have a chance to control it and rein it in. And it is a point in time where people need to hard break from some of these tools and the things that you rely on. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. So we are in a really bad state of affairs right now, in my opinion. It is eroding the core foundations of how people behave by and between each other. And I don't have a good solution. You know, my solution is I just don't use these tools anymore. I haven't for years. It's created huge tension with my friends, huge tensions in my social circles. If you look at, like, you know, my Facebook feed, I've posted maybe 2 times in 7 years, 3 times, 5 times. Like, just, it's less than 10. And it's weird. I guess I kind of just innately didn't want to get programmed, and so I just tuned it out. But I didn't confront it. And now to see what's happening, it really bums me out. Like, think about, like, there were these examples where there was a hoax in WhatsApp where in some, like, village in India, people were, like, afraid that their kids were going to get kidnapped, etc. And then there were these lynchings that happened as a result, where people were like vigilante running around. They think they found the person, and I mean, seriously? Like, that's what we're dealing with. You know, imagine, like, when you take that to the extreme, where, you know, bad actors can now manipulate large swaths of people to do anything you want. It's a really, really bad state of affairs. And we compound the problem, right? We curate our lives around this perceived sense of perfection because we get rewarded in these short-term signals, hearts, likes, thumbs up, And we conflate that with value, and we conflate it with truth. And instead, what it really is fake, brittle popularity that's short-term and that leaves you even more, and admit it, vacant and empty before you did it. Because then it forces you into this vicious cycle where you're like, what's the next thing I need to do now? Because I need it back. Think about that compounded by 2 billion people. And then think about how people react then to the perceptions of others. It's just it's really bad. It's really, really bad.
It sounds like you're taking deep personal responsibility also in being a part of it.
I did a great job there, and I think that business overwhelmingly does positive good in the world. Where I have decided to spend my time is to take the capital that they rewarded me with and now focus on the structural changes that I can control. I can't control that. I can control my decisions, which is I don't use this shit. I can control my kids' decisions, which is they're not allowed to use this shit. And then I can go focus on diabetes and education and climate change.
I forgot about that. I apologize. We should probably cut it off there. He, you know, there's more of that. Anyway, he says we're at a point where we need to start thinking about making a hard break. And so here you have folks in high levels of leadership at companies like Facebook telling us things that we should pay attention to. So we have choices to make. I want to play an extended clip of Neil Postman. He is someone that we probably should pay closer attention to these days. He had some very prescient warnings for us all those years ago on the interwebs, is like a million years ago. This might go, you know, this might as well go back into some kind of, you know, archaeological dig or something in terms of, you know, modern technological terms. But seriously, this was Neil Postman's C-SPAN Book TV interview about his book Technopoly. So give this a listen. This is an extended clip. Go ahead, please.
Neil Postman, author of Technopoly. The Surrender of Culture to Technology. What's your book all about? The tendency in American culture to turn over to technology, sovereignty, command, control, over all of our social institutions. In other words, the book is about how America has developed a new religion, as it were, and the religion is its faith in that human progress and technological innovation are the same thing, and that paradise can be achieved through greater and greater commitment to technology.
What is technology?
Well, I have to define it in the book rather broadly, because not only do I include machinery like television and computers and all that, but also techniques. I call them invisible technologies because most people don't think of them as a sort of machinery, but things like statistics and polling and bureaucratic forms, any systematic and repeatable technique that tends to cause people to constrain their thinking about the world.
That shouldn't sound like that. I don't know what's going on, but it shouldn't sound, you know, like he's on a mission to the moon or whatever the heck is going on. But I don't know. Maybe we can do something about that. If you're not familiar with Neil Postman, though, I will tell you this. He didn't get to the Faustian bargain, as he put it. You know, technology is a sort of Faustian bargain, he said. It's a double-edged sword. It giveth, but it also taketh. And so if he considers it a Faustian bargain, how does that work out? he was, again, you know, telling us some things that we should pay attention to. 1979, teaching as a conserving activity. 1982, the disappearance of childhood, which you could combine his disappearance of childhood with the artificial extension of childhood that John Taylor Gatto talked about, I think, and probably arrive at something very terrifying. His book, his 1985 book, Amusing Ourselves to Death, Public Discourse in the Age of Show Business, is a must read. Conscientious Objections, Stirring Up Trouble About Language, Technology, and Education in 1988. How to Watch TV News with Steve Powers in 1992. Technopoly, of course, in 1992, which was the book he was talking about there or being interviewed about. Technopoly, The Surrender of Culture and Technology. So, I mean, think about it. That was 30 years ago. Again, that's, you know, into antiquity in technological terms, today's modern technological terms. The End of Education, Redefining the Value of School in 1995. Building a Bridge to the 18th Century, How the Past Can Improve Our Future in 1999. And so on. Very, someone we should pay attention to. So, things to read. There's a post you can find of a talk that he gave, Five Things We Need to Know About Technological Change. That's worth reading. You can go to his eponymous website, neilpostman.org, and see these things posted. What did he say? He said a lot of things, those 17 books. But here are some big ideas that have stuck out on me, this person writes. The medium is the message. Borrowing from McLuhan, he explained that every medium, and I completely agree. I think Neil Postman pulled the wizard's curtain back on this concept and elucidated in a way that McLuhan did not, in my opinion. Borrowing from McLuhan, he explained that every medium, TV, radio, typography, oral transmission, changes and biases the message itself, biases the message itself. The written word, for example, tends to bias the message towards linear thinking, logic, exposition, and delayed response. Video tends to bias towards the peek-a-book world. Trivial content that vanishes in seconds, constantly flickering images, yet the viewer has a hard time turning away no matter the subject because the medium is just so darn entertaining and engrossing. These biases mean that news from a newspaper and a television, even with the same subject, have two different messages. Education does not equal entertainment. Vice versa, shows like Sesame Street undermine schooling. It encourages children to love school only if school is like Sesame Street. School is about asking questions. TV is about passive consumption. School is about the development of language. TV demands attention to images. TV is always fun and entertaining. Serious education is not. Postman lamented that by equating education with entertainment, children would never learn the rigors of serious schooling. Sesame Street doesn't teach children to love school or anything about school, he said. It teaches them to love television. Three subjects should be taught as history. Every teacher, Postman said, must be a history teacher. Every subject has a fascinating history. Facts and dates are memorization, not understanding. To teach a subject without the history of how it happened, quote, is to reduce knowledge to a mere consumer product, he said. It is to deprive students of a sense of meaning of what we know and of how we know it. To teach about the atom, without Democritus, to teach about electricity without Faraday, to teach about political science without Aristotle or Machiavelli, to teach about music without Haydn, is to refuse our students access to the great conversation. It is to deny them knowledge of their roots, about which no other social institution is at present concerned. Yeah, we're headed to a break. I'll finish the list. There are a couple more, a few more, four more points. So I'll finish the list when we come back. Stick around. More at it for this break.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com. S-U-S-A-N-A-S Secret.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. Owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour of today's broadcast. So let me finish these points Maybe in the second hour we'll talk about why some of this is important, because I think there are examples, you know. This gets to the stuff that I've been trying to talk about. The inflection point Joe Biden talked about on during that, whatever it was called, what was it called? The primetime speech on the continued battle for the soul of the nation, you know, at Independence Square and creepy backdrop last Thursday, all that stuff. The inflection point. Barack Obama said the same thing back in 2016 at the Rutgers 250th anniversary commencement. You know, he talked about an inflection point. It depends on us, on the choices we make, particularly at certain inflection points in history, particularly when big changes are happening and everything seems up for grabs. Everything seems up for grabs. Huh? I mean, the it's interesting. These things get said, and like what, you know, the inflection point Joe Biden talked about, it's esoteric language. I would say it's at least arguably, I'd just call it esoteric language, but I'd say it's at least arguably esoteric language, employing duality through sophistry and intrigue, seducing and beguiling the masses to believe what they want to believe, regardless if that's what he or his handlers, you know, speechwriters, whatever, meant. Which gets back to Lark's point about reification fallacy. That is, that's a textbook example. And so think about it. You have, through the employment of esoteric language, you know, this duality, sophistry, intrigue, you have a message that goes out to these different crowds who have been fed these disparate narratives. Whether they realize it or not, they've sort of been cutting their teeth on this, you know, conflict-based psychopathy, and they're fed this message that, to the unassuming observer, looks pretty benign, perhaps. But to one audience, it means one thing. To another audience, it means something completely different. And both are sort of weaponized against themselves and each other in the process. It's pretty diabolical. Am I reading too far into it? I don't think so. Anyway, let's finish these points this person makes that Neil Postman's observations. Number four, fear Huxley's future, not Orwell's. Everyone is worried about Big Brother, but we should really fear ourselves. We live in a society where we can spend hours on devices entertaining ourselves. We have access to TV and videos in any location. We can amuse ourselves to death. To ask is to break the spell. Blind belief and passive consumption can be broken through the simple act of asking questions. No medium is exclusively dangerous if its users understand what its dangers are, he said. Healthy skepticism is encouraged. Kids are wired to ask questions, but we often squash those tendencies. Two more observations when we come back at the top of the second hour. Stick around, we'll be right back.
American Freedom News is your daily website that will keep you fully informed on what both the good guys and bad guys are doing in the information war in which we are all engaged. Fed up with the lies of the fake news media and the censorship of big tech giants? American Freedom News is the solution, as we provide truth and knowledge on all the vital issues of the day. American Freedom News believes in America first. The establishment wants us split into numerous hostile groups rather than uniting in a common cause against the corrupt oligarchy that is plundering America and the world. Many more Americans are waking up and realizing they are the victims of the ongoing Great Replacement and Great Reset. But the malevolent forces trying to systematically destroy America can and will be defeated. Be fully informed by reading American Freedom News, the best news and information site on the internet. Go to AmericanFreedomNews.us and find out for yourself. That's AmericanFreedomNews.us.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.